Struggling to move your nonprofit forward? You've come to the right place. Welcome to the Nonprofit Architect, where we are giving you the actionable steps you need to launch and grow your nonprofit organization. Now, here's your host, Travis Johnson.
Hey, welcome to the show. I'm on today with Stephen King, not the world famous author that everyone knows, but still world famous in my eyes. He's the founder and CEO of Growth Force. He's the former CFO and director of development at Amnesty International. And he hosts his own nonprofit related show called Path to Profits. Stephen, how are you doing today?
I'm great, Travis. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. What do you want to talk about today? We've got Growth Force. We've got five nonprofit financial management challenges in a new world. We've got all sorts of great stuff to talk about.
Yeah, that five-step process we've just launched, I think, is what's really exciting me because, you know, I've been serving nonprofits for 30 years and CPA who knows how to raise money, right? You touched on, I was with Amnesty International USA, both on this as the CFO, right after Bruce Springsteen and Peter Gabriel and Sting finished the worldwide Human Rights Now tour, and Amnesty grew from $6 million to $18 million in a year and a half. And so I got a chance to put the financial infrastructure in place. But after doing that for 4 years, I went to Jack Healy, the executive director, and said, hey, I'm ready to be the ED. Like, I want to run a nonprofit. And he said, well, then you need to learn how to raise money, because the job of the executive director is a fundraising job. 2 weeks later, Diane Urtekel came in to me and she said, Steve, I got bad news. Diane Feinstein's running for Senate. I need to go run her campaign. And so she gave me 2 weeks notice. And then I got the chance to take over Amnesty's fundraising. So what we've done over since doing that in the 90s is really help, you know, a lot of nonprofits. I've studied over 1,000 small organizations and put this process to help use your numbers to tell your story, to be able to show the donor the tangible result of the gift so you raise more money, to be able to give the board of directors financial intelligence that shows how they get the biggest return on their limited dollars, and gives the program managers the information they need to be able to create outcomes that best further the mission.
Oh, I love that. It's great work that you're doing with Amnesty International, but what really gets me fired up is actually understanding what those numbers are, what they mean, and how best to leverage those things. When the average person goes and looks at a nonprofit website, there's really no way of knowing how good they're doing. There's things like GuideStar and Charity Navigator, but they don't really tell you the whole picture. So it's nice to see something like Growth Force, where you actually get those numbers, figure out what they mean, and then leverage that to grow your nonprofit. I think it's really cool.
Yeah. And you know, what's nice is this five-step process, anybody can do it. You know, it starts with your mission. Why do you exist? And then identifying what are the outcomes that best further that mission, right? So, you know, we work with the Fort Bend Women's Shelter here in Houston, Texas. And their mission is to break the cycle of homelessness and abuse. You know, if you look at the financial statement, as you say, on GuideStar and the tax return, you know, you're doing a pretty good job on how do they spend their money on programs where it goes. They don't have a lot of fundraising expense. They don't have a lot of administrative costs. But it really doesn't tell you what you need to know, which is how effective are they in breaking the cycle of homelessness and abuse? And the board, Vita Goodell is the executive director, is a good friend of mine. She's in my Vistage group for a long time. We worked set with each other for years. And she said, you know, we're looking at the organization thinking we have 65 beds. We're full every night. And as far as our board's concerned, we're doing a great job. But her mission is not to house the homeless. The mission is to break the cycle of homelessness and abuse. And so the first step we went through was to look at each program and see, how does this help you increase the quality of service to the people you're serving? Or how does this help you increase the number of people you can serve? Or how does each program help you raise some money? And what they found was that the program that had the biggest impact on their mission was their vocational training program. Because if someone goes through these six course series, they're more likely to get a job which will help them not go back to the home of the abuser. And therefore, they're more likely to break the cycle of homelessness and abuse, which is the mission. So you start, step one is about looking at the outcomes that best further your mission and rank them. Three things. Does it increase the quality of the services of the people you serve? Does it let you serve more people? Or does it bring in some money? And by ranking them and giving them a 1, 2, or a 3 ranking, one is it's the best, 3 is it's the worst, and 2 is obviously what's left. You can look at each program and say, okay, is it a 1 for increasing our quality? Is it a 1 for increasing the quantity? And is it the 1 for the unit economics, seeing the money that it brings in? Then 1 times 1 by 1 is going to go to the top of the list. Using this stack ranking chart and program we created, by multiplying, all you need is 1 of them to be a 2, and now you have your second highest priority. If 2 of them are a 2, it's 2 times 2, now you have a 4. And so what's interesting is you quickly start to have 3s and 2s and 1s, and you can see separation between the programs that are the best at achieving your mission, the suite that are in the middle, and the ones at the bottom. And we did this at Amnesty, and it was called zero-based budgeting is the fancy phrase. You look at stack ranking all of your programs, and you draw a line where you run out of money. And you focus the whole budgeting process. You know, I got the board focused on what are the programs on the bubble? What are the last in and the first out? Just like NCAA final, basketball tournaments. And then your board is now being strategic. They can make decisions. And that leads you then to step 2, which is the economics of each program. But step 1 is ranking which programs increase your quality, improve the quantity, or help you raise money. Does that make sense, Travis?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Ranking each program, understanding which ones actually have really the impact that you're trying to have. When you talk about something like ending the abuse cycle and ending homelessness, the real goal is to work yourself out of a job, that no one is getting abused and no one is homeless. There's an organization called, what is it called? I did an interview with them, Community Somebody. And their goal is to really wipe out homelessness. And they have about 18 U.S. cities at functional zero for veterans, which means they have more housing available than veterans on the street, but you can't force someone to get into housing. And it's hard to say serve more people, because what happens if you run out of people? What if your programs are so good, you have less people to serve? That's a tough one.
I have learned a long time ago that problems of success are easy to solve. And so let's not worry about that. You know, if we get to the place where homelessness goes away, then you know what? God did something special. Okay. But I think what the bigger reality, the problem people really have is that they don't have enough money to do all the work they need to do. And so that's why step 2 is where it gets real, right? Step 2 is analyze the economics. And, you know, unit economics is, you know, it's a concept from for-profit businesses, successful businesses, that I like to teach our nonprofit clients. They need to run like a well-run for-profit, except if you have any leftover money, you don't distribute it out to the stockholders. You invest it into more programs and more outcomes. And so the concept of a unit economics in a nonprofit is really a game changer. And unit economics is just a fancy phrase for how much does it cost you for each program? Then you compare that to any money that the program generated, either donated income or earned from services. And that shows you the cost of the program. The unit comes in when you divide that net cost, usually a loss, right, by the number of people that you serve. And now you've got unit economics. You've got a cost per person served, or whatever your outcome is. In the Fort Bend Women's Shelter, the outcome was the number of people who went through vocational training programs. So those 6 courses, you divide the course, you divide the vocational training program's net cost divided by how many people go through the trainings, how many outcomes happen, how many people get that certificate, and that gives you a cost per certificate, a cost per completed program. And now you can start to make data-driven decisions about comparing what does it cost for each outcome across your different programs. It's really powerful. And, you know, We specialize in QuickBooks. 88% of nonprofits use QuickBooks. It's really very simple. It's a profit and loss by class report in QuickBooks. And if you're using Razor's Edge or NetSuite or whatever, it's just a profit and loss by program. But in QuickBooks, it's called a class. And you just separate out all your costs by program, including the overhead. One of the mistakes that we often see is that people, they put all the overhead needs to go into the G&A bucket, right? But for reporting purposes, that's on the tax return that goes in there. But for fundraising purposes and even looking at each program's real cost, you're allowed to allocate the cost of the executive director to the programs that she works on. You can't run a vocational training program without a desk and a chair. So it's appropriate to allocate rent and office supplies to the program that uses the rent and the office supplies. And so we look at the economics. It's not just at the program level, but it's what does it really cost us? And that allows you to be able to make a decision that really sees our what's the cost per outcome, cost per person served. And when you do that overhead allocation, it not only helps you with the watchdogs and the allocation to programs is real. You can back it up, especially with time tracking systems like T-sheets. You know, you can automate the entire process of paying the payroll. And then whatever that executive director filled out our timesheet to work on, some was on board, some was on fundraising, and some was on program. You're going to talk to the Rotary to educate the community. That's program and educational. And now when you run the payroll, it just allocates it to whatever they filled out the timesheets. And it allows you to analyze the economics of each program. That's really a game changer.
I imagine that step is really helpful when you're showing people what you're doing as an organization, and you can give them a legitimate number, like your $10,000 donation is going to, no kidding, get 25 people through our program. Here's the actual numbers that we have that we use that prove the concept. It's not just a number we're throwing out there. It's legitimate.
The Society of Fundraising Executives has shown that if you show the donor the tangible result of your gift, you'll raise more money. You'll raise it both as a higher average gift. You can go to somebody and ask them for more money because you can show them something that of value, and you'll get more frequent giving. You can convert annual givers to monthly giving or go back with another program. And, you know, I'll talk about that in step five, raising more money. But once you've got the stack ranking of your most, which outcomes best further the mission in step one, and you have the economics of each program in step two, then you can start to figure out the most important decision every board and leadership team will have to make, which is which programs do you stop, which ones do you start, and which ones do you continue? And, you know, we've looked at the decisions that most nonprofits have to make. The hardest one is stop, start, continue on programs. Then you've got to figure out when you're going to hire staff to fill those programs. So by looking at the ranking of the programs and the cost per program, it makes it a lot easier to figure out which are the ones that get you the biggest bang for your buck. And once you've prioritized that, then you can start to figure out when do you add new staff. And that's the driver of expenses for every nonprofit. It's typically 70 to 80% of the cost in a nonprofit is the people. So using that same data on which programs are the best and which the cost you per person, now you can start to make a data-driven decisions about adding staff. And that's where nonprofits really have challenges, because if you're never going to want to fire anybody, so adding a headcount is forever. And that makes the budgeting process really challenging. So that's step three, you know, which programs most directly impact your mission, serve more people, and then contribute to your fundraising goals becomes the basis for deciding where do you invest your dollars.
It's important to know where they all fall out. No one wants to stop services ever. Just like you said, no one wants to fire anybody. That's never the goal. But sometimes you're going to find that certain services are just completely ineffective and completely over budget and just not getting the outcomes that are desired. But unless you do the actual math, unless you sit down and go through these things, you're not going to know where you stand. You're not going to know for sure where you're making your money and where you're making your impact. So without actually going through the process, so when I asked you, well, how do you know? And you can't actually answer them until you do the math.
Exactly. And, you know, we got a lot of examples of this. I'll give you a stop, which is the hard one. I work with the Village Learning and Achievement Center. They work with adults with learning disabilities to live an inclusive life in Kingwood, Texas. And it's a founder-led organization. And now they've got a first, they've had a couple of executive directors before this, but this is the, you know, the first one getting a real good salary, not a good salary. You know, that's, we're going to keep somebody a long time. At least that's the plan. And has, you know, an MBA from Rice and is real experienced in real decision-making, right? You know, in the past, we just, we struggled with leadership there and the data to do so. And by doing this stack ranking program, they could see that their what they call their DAS program, which is an adult daycare. It's, I'm not going to say it right, DAHS, adult habilitation services. State of Texas is 49th out of 50th in its funding for adults with learning disabilities. And so that became a real issue because there wasn't enough money to do everything. And, you know, as the founder-led organization, these are your children you're serving. And the mothers of the parents of the adults who are living there are friends for life. And so when there's a need to provide a service, you know, and the state of Texas is willing to give you some money for it, then you want to say yes. But because it doesn't help increase the quality for the people we're already serving, got a 3 on that. It doesn't help us bring in money because the state of Texas doesn't pay it and no donors are willing to pay for it. It's not fundable. And it does an okay job, a 2, on increasing the ability to serve more people because we don't have this program right now. So it's a 3 times 3 is 9 times 2 is 18. It's the bottom of the list. And that made it easy for the executive director to be able to say, okay, I can see we go 1, 2, 4, 6, 9, and then 18. We run out of money here. It's a no brainer. On the flip side, coming back to the Fort Bend Women's Shelter, they found in the second year that they went through this 5-step strategic process that they got a lot of people through the vocational training program. Their donors could see a tangible result of the gift. They gave a lot of money to hire more vocational trainers. But at the end of a year, they realized that they were missing another service they had to start. A lot of the women didn't believe they were worthy of that job. And so even though they got the training, they still went back to the abuser. So they added a neuro networking program. They actually hired therapists who would rewire the brain. I mean, they literally, you know, put electrodes on the brain and have people watching happy shows. You know, Gilligan's Island is very popular, and taking the happiness and teaching the brain to stay happy. Fascinating, right? Only shelter in America that does this, neurotherapy services. And because they can show the tangible result, they were able to get their donors to hire multiple neurotherapist services providers, therapists, because they were able to demonstrate. So they were able to start that program. And then, you know, we'd work with Wheelchairs for Warriors. And they had to make a decision about continuing. So stop, start, continue is the biggest decision. They were getting wheelchairs from donors, but their mission was to help vets live a life to their fullest. And what that means is that if before you went into service, if you were an archer and you competed, they would build the wheelchair so that you could now compete in an archery contest. Or if you like to go into a deer lease in the fields and hunt, which a lot of people here in the South do, they put, you know, like a tractor on the bottom of the wheelchair. So you can go over the hills and through the gullies and get up to the deer blind with your buddies. And so these donated wheelchairs were not their mission. Their mission was to have these customized. And they were worried about being able to track all this, you know, in-kind contributions. People need to put a dollar value on it. And then, well, because we were able to see that this actually did create outcomes that furthered their mission, because they were able to hire somebody who would take what somebody donated and then modify it instead of building one from scratch, they were able to continue to take donated wheelchairs at wheelchairsforwarriors.com. And we track the labor costs with time sheets on your phone of when somebody's working on it. What does it cost? So we can go to a donor and say, listen, we got this free one and it cost us $6,000 for these mods and it cost us $7,000 in material. Will you give us $13,000? Look at what we got. By ranking the programs based on the mission that, and what outcomes further the mission the most, and then looking at the economics of each outcome, you're able to really change the world.
Oh, I love that. It's amazing what's out there and what people are actually willing to do in order to get a mission done and then show what it is and what they're doing. So that's really cool. I love that. Wheelchairs for Warriors. That's awesome.
Yeah. Crystal Larimore, Crystal the Pistol. She's the executive director.
It sounds like it. So you've got all these up. You've figured out which outcomes for their mission. You've analyzed the economics. You figure out which programs you're going to stop, start, or continue. What's next?
So now you got to get everyone in the organization aligned around the plan. And it starts with the board. You've got to get board approval of a budget. It's a couple of hints on how to do a really good budget. It's not hard. You take that profit and loss from your accounting system by month, and you dump it into Excel, and you do one for each class, each department, each program. And then you have a tab for each department, each program, that rolls up into a total. And you have people look at their actual results by month for last year, and then go in and plug into the Excel spreadsheet what they think this year is going to look like. And if, you know, you might have some drivers, you might say based on the number of courses we're going to have, or how many people we want to serve, you might add some variables in there to input it. They, you know, they might need some help with some basic Excel, but it's not hard stuff. But one of the things, so you want to have one for each program, one tab in Excel for each program, one tab for G&A, your administration, one tab for development, and don't forget the capital budget. A lot of people forget the capital budget, and you have to put some money away for the cash flow that you need and the depreciation expense of to replace the air conditioners on the roof and the computers and the chairs or whatever it is that you have to buy every 3, 5, 7 years. So once you've got that budget, then you basically take the same stack ranking. And we've got a template that shows you programs. Column A is the outcomes ranked based on the stack ranking. Column 2 is got the revenue per program. Then the next one is cost per program. And then the next is how many people served and the cost per person served. Now you've got all the data to be able to look at a budget and say, okay, we are investing our money in the things that create the most outcomes. And then what you want to do is you want to, number one, take that budget and put it into the accounting system by department, by program, and give your program managers access to the QuickBooks file or whatever accounting system there is so that they can go in and just see their reports and know how much money's left in my budget. We did this at Amnesty, but we did this, you know, with FedExing printed copies in 1993, but now it's all online. It's all available. So anybody can go and see exactly, okay, I got this grant. How much is left? Did I budget for 2 people or 3? And then when you spend the money, you can track the actual grant expenditures. And when you go back to your donors, you can show them the results. The budget, the power of the budget is a lot of people miss one thing. Number one, you know, what most people look at and say, you know, it's good to look at budget versus actual, right? When you only look at your actual results, you're missing half the story. And what matters is not so much where you are, it's what where you are versus where you hoped to be. Then you can see it. Do you have a problem? Having the budget versus actual makes those reports actionable. You can look and see where my issues are, my variances. But the other big thing that's really powerful, that's true in for-profits as well as nonprofits, is when you report on the budget versus the actual, what it does is it gets people motivated. They understand the plan. I'm part of something bigger than myself. You know, I know what the mission is, and I can see how much money I've got, and I can do it. And so by putting data into the hands of the decision makers, the program managers, you really create more outcomes. And that, you know, it's not just the planning, but monitoring the results of the actual against the plan. That's step 4.
Yeah, absolutely love it. People need to know what they're working with. And if you haven't written it down, if you haven't codified it, if you haven't voted on it and put it in a legitimate budget, and then let each department know what on earth they have to work with, how are they possibly supposed to know how they're doing throughout the year? That seems like a lot of work.
Well, this is what we do for a living. We do this every day. I mean, it's like, you know, the guy who changes the oil on my car, that seems like a lot of work. I don't know. I know where you put the key in and the gas. In between those two things, it's magic to me, right? You know, catalytic converters are getting stolen right now. I don't even know what a catalytic converter is.
I do.
but you get my point, right? If this is yeah. If this is what you do, you get on the phone, you do a Zoom call, and you say, okay, let's go through step one. What stack rank your programs? Here's all your programs listed. Get in front of your leadership team. Which ones increase the quality? 1 through 3. Which ones increase the quality? 1, 2, or 3. And that's it. And the economics is really, for me, the fun part, because all you have to do is set up QuickBooks, right? Right? You have to do two things. You have to set up QuickBooks to track the by program, the costs, and the income, which is really easy. Any good accountant should be doing that already. And you have to take care of what's between the keyboard and the chair. You have to make sure that you're giving that person who's, you know, paying the bills a procedure. And this is what Growth Force does for every single client. You know, not just give you a system, but hold your hands, provide the technical support, call center. What do I do with this bill? You got a dedicated bookkeeper, a dedicated staff accountant, and a dedicated controller that know your organization, that are committed to your mission. Youth Speaks went on. We have videos on our website, growthforce.com. Youth Speaks says, we believe we are changing the world, right? These guys help with inner city kids in the Oakland area in California, helping with reading and literacy and youth speak and speaking, right? Helping them get in front of audiences and confidence. And they said, you know, we believe we are changing the world. And I hope Growth Force believes they're changing the world, because we can't do it without you. Because, I mean, the truth is, Travis, it's once you get this, it's hard to run the organization without it, because it's like running a well-run business, right? You got to have the data. But reason why, though, for me, that gets me so excited about this is step 5 is, you know, it's one thing to go through this financial management system to get the board to approve a budget. And, you know, it's really valuable to be able to put data into the hands of a program manager. But the organizations that have the biggest impact from these 5 steps are the ones that are trying to raise money from individuals and foundations and donors, right? When you can build a case statement that shows the return on investment, and you can then be a good steward of those funds and show them the results, it's a game changer. You know, Crystal, one of the things that when she came to me the first time, the board of directors approved her salary. She was the first employee at Wheelchairs for Warriors. And they said, upon approval of the salary, you need to go contact Growth Force as the very first thing, because we're not going to trust you, Crystal, that we love, with the books. She's like, yay! Because in the veterans world, this is her words, it's on our video on the website, she said, you know, there's a lot of fraudulent characters out there. And I want to make sure that when people donate to Wheelchairs for Warriors, they know that the money is going to for the intended purpose. And so by being able to kind of button down your books, you not only are able to do all the compliance stuff, right? The tax return, the audit, the board meetings, and the budget, but you can go and get your donors to get even more committed. One of the things that we did at Amnesty, and I'm really on a mission for this, is to help set up monthly giving programs. The technology is amazing, right? Now, off the shelf, you can just automatically debit your donors' bank accounts, and it doesn't cost you a credit card fee or a stamp even. And that allows you in the development team to be able to build and cultivate a relationship with those monthly sustainer givers. And so what the secret to doing this is, you take your monthly giver, say they give you $1,000 a year, sorry, your annual giver, take your annual donors, the people give you say $1,000 at the end of the year. You drop the last zero, and then you ask them to give that much every month. So you ask them to give you $100 a month. And now you got 20% more. But more importantly, you got steady cash flow. Every nonprofit struggles with that. Year-end giving is 80% or 60% even. And then you got to have a spring gala or some golf event to balance it off in the beginning of the summer. And then you hope to get through August and September. And the cash flow, the being able to get a monthly gift allows you to be able to say to a donor, you're paying for these outcomes every month. Why? Because their money is going to pay for a salary. It's going to pay for the benefits. It's going to pay for the rent. And if you can look at the program, what the people create as outputs in their program, now you can show somebody the tangible results of the gift is you're going to help me pay for this program manager. And this program, here's a great story. The Torture Abolition and Survivor Support Coalition in Washington, D.C. It's run by an executive director, Leonce, who is a friend of friends of from Amnesty, got connected us, and we are their accounting department. And he wanted to hire a casework manager, a legal case manager, a lawyer. Why? Because when we went through and said which outcomes best further the mission, it's asylum claims, it's refugee claims, it's helping people get away from torture in their countries. And so when you looked at the economics of that program, what he said was, I need to hire a entry-level lawyer because I got 20, 25 pro bono attorneys here in Washington, D.C. that will help me with amicus briefs and the refugee asylum cases. But I need somebody who's going to work with all those because each one of those people might have five cases. So if I could get a full-time person, that means I get 100 cases a month. So you look at that's the outcome, right? That's the purpose. The program is clear. Number one outcome is clear. Now the economics is, okay, an entry-level lawyer in Washington, D.C., somebody who's willing to do it for nothing is, you know, 60 grand, 65 maybe. I mean, you know, it's not even it's five times that in a law firm. But when you add up the taxes and the health insurance and the office space, well, they don't have office, it's virtual, but you know, the overhead, it's $100,000. And so by going to the board and getting approval to start a new program, he was able to, at his very next donor meeting, he asked, the donor said, if you got money today, what would you do with it? By having that answer at his fingertips, he was able to get a $100,000 commitment at lunch and start this new program. And what you're finding here is there's people who are right now, there's the haves and the have-nots. There's a lot of people who have a lot more money in their bank account than they ever had. PPP flowed and all the other funding flowed into the U.S., you know, the U.S. economy. And a lot of people are looking who want to give some of this away, but they need to feel good about it. And this ability to show the donor the tangible result and then give stewardship reports that show them the results of their gift will increase your fundraising exponentially.
Oh, yeah, I love that. I'm a huge fan of recurring giving. There's one thing that I preach on this show over and over and over, it's sustainability. Take that $10,000 annual donor, turn them into $1,000 a month, you get 20% more at the end of the year, you get that $12,000. But when you have that recurring monthly gift, you're not scrambling throughout the year trying to figure out how on earth you're going to raise the money, pay the bills, keep the lights on, or keep people employed. And people forget until the end of the year just how important, how vital nonprofits are in each community. And you have to keep those doors open all year long, not just during the holidays. So huge fan of sustainability and recurring giving.
Yeah, you nailed it, Travis. That's exactly right. You know, what's really cool, though, is a good development office is every month, they're going to show that donor what happened with their gift, right? If you say, I like your better example, even better than mine, right? You're asking somebody for $1,000 a month. What does that do? Okay, so let's use the example of the caseworker, right? If your total cost was $100,000 and somebody's giving you $12,000, you know, that's 8%, right? So if they're doing, now you got, you're managing 20 lawyers who are each got five cases, that's 100 cases a month times 12 months, that's 1,200 cases with your monthly giving, you're paying for 100 of those cases. So by giving me $1,000, you're paying for 100 cases a year. I can translate that down to, you know, eight cases a month, two cases a week, you know, and you can send them a picture in a monthly email that says, I wish you could have been with me here when Travis got his approval for a hearing. And it was, you know, show a picture of the lawyer filing the amicus brief. All of a sudden, you've built a connective tissue with your donors that makes them feel like they're part of something bigger than themselves. So it's not just the sustainability, but as a fundraiser, I now have a monthly reason to create an acknowledgement, a sustainer mailing or a cultivation mailing.
Oh, that's perfect. That's so powerful too. That is just so powerful. I wanted to thank you for being my guest today, Stephen, and talking us through the five steps to get alignment in your organization and your board thinking strategically. If you're listening to the show and you need help in your financial world and you're pulling in over $1 million, reach out to Stephen King at Growth Force. And if you're not quite there yet and you're still trying to build up, check out his podcast, Path to Profit.
Thanks, Travis. You can also, I'm on LinkedIn at Stephen King CPA and Twitter, Stephen King CPA, or you can just email me, Stephen, S-T-E-P-H-E-N, at growthforce.com.
Thanks again, Stephen.
You've been listening to The Nonprofit Architect. To listen to all our past shows, visit nonprofitarchitect.org. And be sure to subscribe, rate, and review our show. Thank you.